Looking competent isn't as vital as being competent, but it is important. As Dr. Lawrence J. Peter, author of the multi-million copy selling The Peter Principle and The Peter Prescription reminds us, competence, like truth, beauty, and a contact lens, is in the eye of the beholder. The customer's eye is going to be on you, so make sure that customer sees what he or she expects to see. A salesperson practicing a high level of competency. The creation of that vision is all up to you. It's your job to make it a reality. An interesting study was conducted a number of years ago at UCLA by Dr. Albert Mehrabian. In the study, people who had made purchases from salespeople were asked what influenced them to make the purchase. Surprisingly, only 7% said it was something the salesperson said. 38% felt the salesperson exhibited confidence by their tone of voice, how they said what they said. And that made a strong impact. The biggest news was that 55% of the product purchasers said they felt confident in making the purchase because of something visual. Specifically, they felt the salesperson displayed competence in their body language, their walk, their gestures, and so on. So a brief study of body language could increase your competence with your clients in short order. Here are a few ideas you can implement right away to improve your competency. Number one, stand or sit beside the client if there's only one other party involved. This shows you're on their side, not an adversary across the desk or table. If there are two or more parties involved, sit or stand where you can make eye contact with each of them. Number two, when gesturing with your hands, never make a fist or a pushing gesture towards your clients. If you're pushing something away with your solution, push it off to the side. Number three, sitting or standing up straight is essential. Slouching or sliding down in your chair is too casual a gesture. Being upright displays the character trait of an ethical and principled individual. Number four, nodding as you listen tells people you are paying attention to what they're saying. Number five, never fold your arms. This is a closed gesture that could tell them you're no longer interested in them or that you have now become an adversary. You can improve your odds of winning the numbers game of sales by looking at things through the eyes of your clients. What do they really want and need from their contact with you? Your needs are not irrelevant, but they should take second place to those you serve. Don't worry about your sales quota, your mortgage, or that long-awaited vacation to the Bahamas. Take care of your clients, and the quotas, the bills, the vacations, and a lot more will take care of themselves. Again, it really boils down to a mathematical equation that includes the steps to trust that we've covered so far. Propriety plus intent plus commonality, plus credibility, equals competency. Like all math equations, if the elements are correct and in the correct order, you always get the correct and desired result. To demonstrate competency, consider making a list of questions that a potential client might want to ask a competent sales professional in your particular industry. Put yourself in their shoes. Numerous factors will dictate how you vary your questions. Among them are, did you initiate this sale or did the potential client? Is there an investment range they need to consider? How much latitude do you have to negotiate the sale? What's going on in your industry? What are your company policies? How is the current economy affecting their business and yours? The key is to put yourself into the mindset of your potential future client. What do prospects and clients really want to know? If you're new to the profession and have some difficulty developing your questions, ask a veteran salesperson to help you get started. As with any other skill, once you give it a couple of good tries, you'll learn and eventually become a master. Begin by saying something like this: John and Mary, if I were thinking about my financial future, there are some questions I'd expect you to have about our product. Let me see if they're in line with your thinking. You'd probably want to know, how long have we been in business? Who we are and what we're all about? What makes our brand better than the other guys? How well our service after the sale might be? Or, of course, one question everyone has is, how much does it cost? What are my options? And when can you begin enjoying the benefits of the product? Chances are good that's pretty close to what your potential clients are wondering. An excellent way to put them at ease and build trust is to answer three or four of the most important questions right up in front. Get them out of the way. This provides a measure of genuine relief for your customer. Gee, they're a lot more flexible on payment plans than I thought. Phew, this isn't going to be ruining my morning after all. Gosh, I didn't realize so many options were available. You will answer the rest of the questions and probably a couple they may not have considered yet during the remainder of your presentation. Most of the time, your prospects will bring up questions that really aren't all that pertinent to the sale or very relevant to their real interest. It could be that they are nervous, trying to come up with better questions, or just stalling for time. It is your job to find and address the real questions. One way to gauge the true importance of a question is to ignore it once. Just respond with something like, "Good question. I'll address that specifically later in my presentation, if that's okay with you." Of course it's okay. If the question is legitimate, you've told them you'll provide the answer. If you forget or don't cover it well enough, they can always bring it back up again. And if it's not relevant, then you can just forget it. Rarely will a customer restate an unimportant question. It just doesn't come back up because you guide the process into the relevant areas. Your enemies at this early stage of the sales process can be labeled B, R, and I for boredom, resistance, and impatience. These enemies can be eliminated when you establish the correct propriety, deliver your intent statement, ask casual warm-up questions for commonality, and offer reasonable documentation of your credibility. The completion of those four steps alone could build enough confidence in them of your competency level and complete the trust element of the one-call closing system. However, just to be certain it is fully recognized and addressed, you should have that list of questions ready. If they see that, as a consumer, you're just like them, maybe you even asked a few questions they hadn't thought of, they'll assume you're competent. After all, they assume they're competent, don't they? And if you show that you are like them, they'll listen to you. Once you have correctly used the five steps to gaining trust, your customer psychologically grants you permission to move to the next area, which is establishing their need. Building trust eliminates the fear of being vulnerable to the wiles of someone in sales. In fact, mentally at this point, they're encouraging you to get on with it. They're interested and even getting a bit excited about the prospect of owning your product or service. That's a very good place for both of you to be. It's called a win-win situation.
Track 8, the elements of need. Step number 1, problem identification.
Earlier in this program, we talked about the importance of the word sequence and using the Sell It Today system in the proper order. As you'll recall, the elements of the system include trust, need, help, and hurry in just that order for the seller-initiated sale. At this point, we've already reduced sales resistance by 50% with the five steps for building trust. So we're now ready to move on to the second element of need. As a quick review, in seller-initiated sales, putting the step of determining your customer needs before building sufficient trust would be a blatant example of jumping the gun. Yet we see it done all too often. Why is this basic mistake so common? Because it seems so natural to get right to the point, that's why. However, you must always begin with trust. The only time need comes before trust is when a customer walks into your store. He or she clearly has a need, a desire, and some kind of budget. However, you still shouldn't assume they're ready to buy. Without trust, you'll never be able to close a sale. It just can't happen. Any recommendation or suggestion you make without trust being present will be looked upon at the very least with skepticism. It is a mistake bordering on the criminal to attempt selling this way. You'll make several poor and often sale-destroying mistakes. First, you appear desperate. Second, you make the other person feel you're just trying to make quota. that you don't really care about their needs. And third, it may seem that you're under pressure from the sales manager to close them now. If you put need before trust in a selling situation in which you contact the potential client first, you'll be taking a long hop, skip, and a jump off a short pier, and will find yourself up to your neck in lost sales. And as we've seen with the trust-building steps, developing that all-important level of trust can only take a few minutes if you plan it well. At some point during the sale, you will be required to ask important, often confidential, and sometimes very personal questions that require a trusting relationship. Honest, 100% correct answers from your potential clients are essential to serving their real needs. Inaccurate answers are a waste of time for both parties and will only result in inevitable dissatisfaction for everybody concerned. Putting the cart before the horse creates a lose-lose situation. You can't get the valuable information about your customer's needs without trust. Would you discuss your salary with someone you do not trust? Your plans for the future? Your family budget? Your heart condition? Your aging parents' medication needs? Yet these and other extremely serious and personal subjects come up all the time in sales. And while they ought to come up, it should be only when appropriate. If they remain hidden in the background during the entire presentation, some salesperson has not built a foundation of trust and there will be no close. The reason clients hesitate to provide certain information, at least initially, is because the salesperson skipped the step of trust and jumped into a self-made mud puddle of need. The salesperson is now the one in need of a new potential client. Imagine this. An attractive young man approaches an attractive young woman at a singles get-together. What are his chances of building a relationship if he addresses her in the following manner? He says, "Excuse me, but I've been noticing you all evening." She smiles and replies, "Oh, you have?" He says, "Oh, yes, and that's a lovely dress you're wearing. You must know a lot about fashion." She thanks him. He moves on with, "I think you're very attractive, and I'd like to ask you out to dinner, but first, would you mind telling me how old you are and how much you weigh?" She is obviously quite taken by surprise. He continues with, "Do you have any unusual medical conditions?" And wait, don't go. What did I say? And she takes off. I'm certainly not a romance columnist, but feel pretty safe in saying that young man has already seen the best moments of that new relationship. Suppose, however, that the young woman was in a medical complex and the young man was her doctor. Would those questions then be appropriate? The questions, "How old are you? How much do you weigh? Do you have any unusual medical conditions?" take on an entirely new context, don't they? In fact, these questions seem completely appropriate. Instead of walking away, the young woman would probably provide the answers immediately and without question. The difference is the level of trust. A master at one-call closing gets accurate answers to questions because he or she establishes trust with the customer. Only then can the need questions be answered with any degree of honesty. If you're going to be asking a good bit of personal information, debt or health matters, for example, you should always preface them with a phrase something like, "I don't mean to be personal, but I can do a better job by getting the answers to these types of questions. Will that be okay?" This is called getting permission to ask personal questions. Another example would be, "Not to be personal, but to do a better job for you, may I ask you a few questions?" Or you might say, "To serve your needs to the best of my ability, I need to get to know your specific situation and concerns. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions now?" Another suggestion would be to ask, "With your permission, I'd like to ask you a few questions now. They will help me maximize your time here and make sure that I provide the right solution to your particular need, okay?" Once they agree, you have permission to move to the element of need. It's important to understand, first and foremost, that a need is an interpretation. Your customer doesn't really need a new car. He or she needs reliable transportation to get back and forth to work. She doesn't really want a new life insurance policy. She wants to ensure her bills are paid and to leave something for her children or grandchildren. The purchasing agent says the company needs a new steam turbine for the power plant. You interpret that correctly to mean they need greater efficiency, lower cost per kilowatt, happier customers, or higher fourth quarter earnings. The young couple doesn't really want a mortgage. They want to live happily ever after. In the Sell It Today system, there are 5 steps for understanding and developing the element of need. Regardless of your product or service, regardless of your industry, your company, the economy, geographic location, or any other factor, there are 5 basic steps you must take to develop and understand your customer's real need. You can help them get there wherever there may be by taking these steps. They are, 1, problem identification. 2, discovery. 3, qualify. 4, need acknowledgement. And 5, pact acknowledgement. If you've been a student of mine prior to listening to this particular program, you'll know that I strongly suggest you replace the word problem with the word challenge in your vocabulary. For purposes of identifying this segment of the Sell It Today system, I'm going to use the word problem because that's what your potential client will be thinking they have, a problem that needs to be resolved. The problem identification process can be surprisingly brief, or it can require a considerable investment of time, depending on your type of product or service. How much time it takes to identify also depends upon who initiates the sale and the prospect's level of need. For example, a need can be non-existent, slight but real, or real and immediate. So our goal is not only to determine the real need so we can offer a real solution, we also have to determine the level of that need. When the potential client initiates the sale, there is some level of curiosity. Something brought these folks to your doorstep or caused you to be invited to theirs. In this case, there is often a high level of need for your product or service. In these situations, the psychological sequence of events is different from salesperson-initiated situations. When we initiate the sale, we must start the discovery and need process in a more comprehensive manner. After all, before you made contact with them, they may have never heard of your product, much less thought they had a need for it. The discovery process with regard to determining need can begin as simply as, what brings you folks out to Ajax Autos today? It can be as complex as having your potential client fill out a 20-question survey. Many of the top companies we've trained in the health and fitness field have built a questionnaire or survey into the facility tour. The survey allows the health consultant to isolate the information necessary to find out what is important, what is really important, and what's not very important at all to the potential member. This valuable information is then used to move the membership sale forward. Whatever the situation, you must invest all the time required to find out what is going on in your client's mind. You must take care of this important step completely before attempting to prescribe product benefits. There are no exceptions. Take the real estate industry, for example. A champion salesperson would never start showing property without first identifying the prospect's particular situation. A significant number of variables will dictate which properties will and will not be shown. For example, family budget. Any expansions in the family, such as having a baby or having grandma move in with them. Any reductions, such as children going off to college or having gotten married. The type of neighborhood they're interested in. Proximity to good schools. Proximity to jobs for each spouse. Location of major traffic arteries. Distance to medical and health facilities. Peace and quiet, or the hubbub of city life. Without this knowledge, you'd be showing starter homes to millionaires and mansions to apartment-seeking newlyweds. Initially, you have a lot of questions with big, long blanks where the answers should be. Start out with a friendly conversational question. What brings you good folks our way today? Generally, your customers will start filling in the blanks for you right away. Even as those blanks get filled in, you know there are other empty spaces on the page, So you keep on asking those friendly questions. Slowly, surely, and courteously, you begin to narrow the focus to discovering their real needs. Your efforts in this element are enhanced by your professionalism, which was initially demonstrated in handling our first element of building trust. People considering doing business with you appreciate a professional attitude. It proves you care. They respond positively because they'll see that you are competent, credible, and trustworthy. You see how this works? First things first. One step at a time. A place for everything and everything in its place. One of those steps is to repeat what you've just heard from them. This serves two very important purposes. Number one, repetition shows that you're actively listening to your customer. And number two, it makes sure you and your customers are on the same page. Use these phrases: let me see if I understand. Or let me show you an example so I can be sure I understand exactly what you want. Here's another one. If I'm hearing you correctly, you're looking for this, that, and the other in blue, right? Or you might say, so I discuss what is really important to you, Mr. Johnson. Let me see if I understand what you've just said. If you're not clear in your understanding, now is the time to get clear on anything that may not be exactly what they need or want. If you are correct in your understanding, you'll be ready to move on to the next step. When you make the effort to prove that you, your product, and company are credible, and that your intentions are directed toward providing unique solutions to your customers' unique problems, the discovery of needs process becomes much easier. Sometimes it flows so naturally as to be unnoticeable as a sales step at all. Let's discuss step number one of the need element, problem identification, in a little more detail. What usually happens when a prospect enters a retail environment? A salesperson rushes up with a big grin and a mighty, "May I help you?" The salesperson, bless his or her heart, is trying to do the right thing. She wants to be polite, be conscientious, and offer her services. Of course, this is usually followed by the equally mighty, "Oh, I'm just looking." The potential client has a number of reasons for this response. He or she might really be looking, might be killing time waiting for a movie at the other end of the mall, might be too shy to ask for help, or just not ready to divulge his vulnerability at this point, which could easily indicate a lack of trust. Maybe he just wants to take his time, set his own pace, make his own decision whether or not to proceed. There are two major challenges with the "May I help you?" approach. The first challenge is the "may" part. That automatically gives control of the situation to your prospect. We respect prospects. We need them and we want them all the rest of our lives. But we know they are not the most capable people to lead someone through the sales process. The one-call closing specialist is far more qualified to see that each prospect gets precisely the product or service he or she needs. The second challenge concerns the word "help." Your friendly inquiry assumes and implies that your prospect is in need of help. Even people in desperate need sometimes don't want to admit it. Does saying "may I help you" move the sale forward? No, so maybe we should stop saying it. Instead, I suggest you ask why they came into your store. You might say, "What brings you into Cox's Cabinet Corner today? What brought you to AAA Auto this morning?" Or, "How can I help you this morning?" These are questions that require something more than a reflex answer on the part of the potential client. They are conversation starters, and beginning a conversation in retail sales is what opens the door to providing them assistance and closing sales. Notice how those simple, friendly statements eliminate the "may I help you" challenges. The prospect can't respond with a "no" or a "no, I'm just looking." They are open-ended questions, and any polite person will be obligated to provide a reasonable answer. And you haven't put anyone on the defensive by implying they can't handle the current situation on their own. In one sense, it's quite obvious why someone enters Cox's Cabinet Corner. They want a cabinet, so why not jump directly to the close? A one-time closing master knows there's more to the tale. Why does she want cabinets in the first place? How many cabinets does she need? What size? How many drawers? What finishes or colors? Glass or solid fronts? Modern or classic styles? Will they need cabinet liner paper? How about a set of brass cup hangers? Oh, you see, you don't know at all. That's what problem identification is all about. Here's how the scenario might sound. Hello, what brings you to Cox Cabinet Corner? The potential client answers, oh, I'd like to unpack my fine china, but we need more room. You would then say, so you'd like something distinctive to set up and I'm sure show off your fine china, right? She answers, oh, yes. Can you show me something in a dark wood? You would move forward with, of course, just step over here. If you don't mind my asking, in what style is your home decorated? At this point, the problem has been identified. Our salesperson has taken the appropriate step at the appropriate time. We gained insight into the prospect's situation by not jumping ahead of them. In some situations, problem identification can be a bit more complex, especially in seller-initiated sales. The need for exact measuring for certain home improvements, conducting water purity tests, property measurements, or surveys for vacation preferences are a few examples. But the principle remains the same. You must identify the problem before you can solve it. Mr. Johnson, when we set up this meeting, you mentioned that you are concerned about your financial situation and wanted to review where you stand today. Tell me more about your specific concerns. For example, how soon would you and your wife like to begin enjoying a retirement lifestyle? Or, Mr. Smith, when I first contacted you, I had hoped to help you lower your monthly utility bills. What would you say is your biggest concern with your current usage? Here are a few more examples of problem identification openings and likely responses. Good morning. What brings you out to Ajax Autos today? The man replies, well, the boy is headed to college next month. He'll be needing some wheels. In another situation, you might say, good afternoon, sir. What brings you out on such a soggy day? The reply might be, the soggy day, I need a new raincoat. You could then answer, looks like you got here just in time. If you step over here, I'll be glad to show you what we have available. Do you have a color preference? Another retail example might be, hi, thanks for coming in. Would you like to just look around, or is there something in particular you're looking for? Admittedly, these approaches won't eliminate every, no, I'm just looking, but they will whittle down those responses to a paltry few. Try it and see for yourself how much more information you gain and how much faster you get them talking about their needs than with your old approach.